Welcome to Your Aged Care Compass podcast. Join us to find out how to support your older loved ones at home. We're going to help you make sense of Australia's aged care system. We talk about legal and financial considerations for aging and how chronic health conditions impact your older loved ones' well-being. And we share real life stories of where it went wrong for people and how we got them back on track.
Welcome to episode 4 of your Aged Care Compass podcast, How to Get Help at Home. This is one of the most common questions we get asked, and it's surprising how many people don't know that there are aged care programs that offer the support they need. We're going to have a chat today about what you need to know to start the process of getting help at home. Coral, if people want in-home support, where do they start?
Jill, they start at the Gateway, which is otherwise known as My Aged Care. For people who are seeking subsidised support, that comes from the Commonwealth Government. And there's a range of programs that older people can apply for to be considered eligible for that will offer them the services and support that they need to support them in their own home for as long as possible. My Aged Care is a contact centre or a call centre. They screen people for further assessment. I always say to people, be very clear that My Aged Care screens people. It doesn't assess people. That initial screening is done so that My Aged Care can then refer you onto one of two of the assessment teams, which will then give you referral codes or approvals for the kind of in-home support that you might need. It's really important for people to be prepared before they make contact with My Aged Care, because that preparation then will ensure that they get the best outcomes, get that information across to My Aged Care so that if people have perhaps higher needs or more complex needs, they might go to an assessment with the aged care assessment team first rather than entering that process via entry level.
On that point, Coral, if someone says, I've had My Aged Care assessment, that's actually not correct.
It's not correct at all, Shell. And when I hear this, I correct people straight away, because if people say I've had my aged care assessment, what that reveals to me is that the person has no idea where they sit in the aged care system or in the process. Like I just said, my aged care doesn't assess. So if people say I've had my aged care assessment, they could have registered with my aged care and had that initial screening. Then they would go on to one of the two assessment teams who would assess. And those assessment teams are not called My Aged Care assessors. Certainly they are assessing under the aged care system, My Aged Care. Those two assessment teams had their own specific names. And it's important for people to understand what those teams are so that if they need increased services or support at home, they know where they sit and they know what action to take and what to say from that point onward.
Yeah, that's so important to understand. And even I think that making that referral to My Aged Care, even though they may be on the phone to someone, be very clear that is not an assessment. That is a screening process.
That's right. It's screening. Yep.
I guess the next logical step from there is eligibility. Now, I know we take many calls from people every week, people who have been told they are ineligible. We should probably discuss some of the reasons people are told that they're ineligible, which are actually incorrect.
Yeah, so eligibility seems to really confuse some people. And in fact, it's really quite simple and straightforward. So if you're age 65 years of age or older, or if you're a First Nations person and you're 50 years of age or older and you need help to do the things that you used to do at home for yourself, then that demonstrates eligibility. We've heard a lot of misinformation, incorrect reasons as when people call us. And unfortunately, this information is coming out of My Aged Care. So people ring up to register and to see if they're eligible for support at home, and they're being told that they're not, when in fact they are. So some of the reasons we've been told is people have called My Aged Care and they've been told that they're not eligible for in-home support because they have a carer, which is really a big one that surprises me, because if someone has a carer, if someone is in the home or coming to the home, might be family or a neighbour or friend, and that person's coming in and offering that support, that actually indicates that you do need the support and that you are eligible for that in-home support. So if someone has a carer, absolutely, that's demonstrating eligibility. Yeah. We've been told by people that if they can still cook for themselves, that they're not eligible. But unfortunately, because the screening, remember, it's not assessment, which goes into a lot more depth. When people are being screened, if they're not getting that information across in a detailed way, when my aged care says to them, can you still cook? The person who might be making themselves a piece of toast for dinner in the evening will say, yes, I can still cook. But making a piece of toast for dinner is not cooking. That's not meal preparation. It's so important just to be clear about what cooking means. We're talking a light meal might be scrambled eggs and toast, or meat and three veg is a full meal, but certainly making a piece of toast in the evening is not cooking. So that if someone's told that they're not eligible for that reason, you really need to be aware of the difference of a piece of toast and a full meal preparation.
Yeah. And I know cooking's one. The next one, and we've heard this on more than one occasion, you're ineligible if you still drive. Now, driving is one facet of a person's daily life.
Yeah, and you know, if people have nobody else to get them to the shops, and I see this more probably in regional and perhaps rural areas around Australia, but it did happen to Mum as well when we were getting her into the system and she was still driving at that time. If people have no one else to go to the shops for them, if they can't get into a taxi or afford a taxi and there's no bus service, of course they're going to drive. Mm. And that driving that they're doing, that might be just 500 metres down the road. It might be fairly close. And so it doesn't really constitute driving as in you're driving around town, you're negotiating roundabouts and traffic lights and giveaway signs. So people who are still driving may have to drive because there's no one else to support them, so they can get to the shops and buy some groceries, because otherwise they're not going to be able to eat then. So again, driving is something people need to be understand that there's a reason why people still drive. If when my aged care is asking this question, it's important for people to say, I drive to the local shops, but that's all I do because my vision's impaired and I can't see at night, so I can't drive at night. I don't drive in the wet weather. I rely on my family or my neighbours to pick me up if I have to go to a community event or an appointment or something like that.
And even things like, you'll only drive if you've got someone with you.
Yeah.
Things like that, they all demonstrate a level of ability or the lessening of that ability. Yeah. And same, Coral, people are told you're ineligible if you can still shower yourself.
Yeah, interesting that one as well. We know some older people that by, you know, having a flannel, a little sponge and bird bathing themselves at the bathroom sink two or three times a week, and that might be fine for them. They might be happy with that, but that's not showering themselves. The people that we have spoken to about this, their bathrooms, their showers are not set up for them to shower safely. The shower might be over the actual bathtub. And so stepping up and into the bath it's a trip or a falls hazard. And so the older person acknowledges that and won't do that. So they're sponging themselves over the bathroom sink. So that's not a shower. But when people are unprepared and they make that contact with my aged care and they're asked this question, a lot of people will say they will think that sponging themselves at the bathroom sink is a shower, and that's what they convey. Regardless of that, if you can or you can't shower yourself, that doesn't have an impact on eligibility. People like our mum can still shower herself, but we've put all that support in those grab rails and non-slip mats and non-slip. Exactly. We've put all that equipment so she can shower safely. But if people might be able to shower themselves, but there's so many other things that they can't manage in their day-to-day life. So showering in itself certainly doesn't demonstrate eligibility or not for in-home aged care programs.
And I think these points that we've just raised, they're all points in isolation. And I think a decision shouldn't be made on eligibility or not based on a point in isolation. It has to be a whole picture.
It's a whole picture, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So regrettably, this information does come out of My Aged Care, but I think people just need to be aware that if they do encounter these kind of conversations when they make that first contact with My Aged Care, it's probably a good idea to have a second go. If they're told that they're not eligible for any of the reasons that we've just discussed, they should probably just hang up the phone and try again another day, because there is different experience within that workforce that in the call centres of My Aged Care. And for whatever reason, someone might get off on the wrong foot and get the wrong information if they're told they're not eligible. The people that have come to us and asked us this, and we've said, you are, just try again. I think people need to be very mindful that they should not really accept that information if they've been told that, but call back another day and have a conversation with someone else.
One other question about eligibility, Coral. Does someone's financial situation make a difference?
No, it doesn't at all. And that's another one that we hear, that people who are self-funded retirees are not eligible, and that's incorrect as well. So registering with My Aged Care, being screened at that initial contact by My Aged Care, there's no cost for that. Going on then and having an assessment at entry level or at the higher level with the Aged Care Assessment Team, there's no cost for that as well. I think where this misinformation comes about is that there are some programs that are means tested and there are some that aren't. So if people are self-funded retirees or have quite a lot of means, then they will be subject to some means testing, but there's scales of what people may have to contribute towards their care. That's inescapable. But there are also programs that are not means tested. So yep. It's important for people not to think or not to proceed with getting the help they need if they're self-funded retirees. They're absolutely eligible like everybody else.
Let's assume then that someone says, okay, I think I need to contact My Aged Care. There's more to it than simply picking up the phone. People need to prepare.
Absolutely. Preparation is key to, I say, getting the right assessment for the right support. Now, really, the best preparation that you can do is to take some time to reflect on the help that you might be getting around the home right now. If you're asking your family or friends for support, if you're paying someone to mow your yard, if you're paying a cleaner to come each week to help you with the cleaning, this is all support that you need to get across to My Aged Care. So you would write that down. If you have family members who are cooking meals for you on the weekends and then bringing them around and popping them in the freezer so you can just put them in the microwave, that's indicative of support that's required. People should, looking at who might be coming into the home, is our family members ringing your GP and arranging your appointments for you and then picking you up and taking you to those appointments. That needs to be written down as well. So anything, any aspect of your day-to-day living that someone is helping you with, you need to write that down. And then you also need to write down how often that support is happening. Is it happening 2 days a week? How many hours at a time? Like if someone has to take the morning off work to pick you up and take you to your doctor's appointment and drop you home, how long would that take? Would that be 3 hours of support? So it's really important that people write down the detail in how often that support is being provided. It's also really important, and this is something that can get missed in that screening process, is the toll that it's taking on carers. Older people who are getting significant support from their family don't always realise how much support they're getting. Yeah. And so adult children are organising all these things for mum and dad and running them around to appointments and cooking meals for them and cleaning for them and paying their bills for them. But the older person often doesn't see that amount of support that's being provided. And with sandwich generation people, you know, as we are, we have our own families, we have our own careers, running our own businesses. And supporting older loved ones, it does take a toll. All of that takes a toll. So regrettably, people come to us who are actually at the end of their tether because they've been supporting their older loved ones for such a long time and they're completely exhausted and they can't do it anymore. And so we recognise this as carer stress or pushing into care of crisis. It's essential that people get that across when they speak to My Aged Care because we acknowledge this as like a vulnerable situation or a situation of high risk where that carer can't sustain that caring role anymore. And if something doesn't change, then that carer may not be able to offer that support anymore, which leaves the older person more vulnerable and at a higher risk because that supportive network is unsustainable and can't go on. So, there's certainly it is not as simple as picking up the phone and seeing if I'm eligible for aged care support. The time that you spent preparing for that initial discussion will give you the best chance of being clear in your mind and then being able to get all that information across when you speak with My Aged Care. The more detail you can give My Aged Care, the better they can write their notes and then make that referral onto either entry level or at the higher level with an aged care assessment team.
And I think it's important to acknowledge here, Coral, that the honesty and the reality of the situation has to be disclosed.
Absolutely.
And we know a lot of older people are very stoic and they say, I'll manage, oh, it's not that bad, I'm coping. And unfortunately, if you go into making contact with My Aged Care and adopt that approach,
it works against you. If someone has suggested that call be made to My Aged Care to see if you're eligible for support, if older loved one, mum or dad needs some support, and you might be there with them when they make that call or they might make the call themselves. If they then say, I'm okay, or I'm okay, my daughter is supporting me or my son does everything for me, you might as well not even make that referral because that My Aged Care will say, okay, you're doing all right. Your family is supporting you. Why do you need formal support? And it's possible that that interaction that you have with My Aged Care may not progress to an assessment because you've portrayed that you're actually doing okay.
You're not. That's right. And or maybe the older person's doing okay, but the family members are not.
Exactly.
So important. When you're ready to make contact with My Aged Care, so assuming we've got our list and we've had a think about what we want to say, what are the next things that people should be aware of when they're ready to make that contact with My Aged Care?
The person, the family, had some time to think and write down all those points, those challenges that you're having, the pain, the functional limitations, that mobility issues that a person is struggling with each day. So I always say, sit down with someone that you know and trust, which is likely to be a family member who is a carer, and make the call together. So you would call on the mobile phone and you would have it on speaker because when you initiate that contact with My Aged Care, we'll want to know that the older person is consenting to being screened and then potentially an assessment ongoing from there. As an adult daughter or son of an older person, if you were to ring My Aged Care yourself without your parent there and say, I want to refer mum or dad for services and support, it's unlikely that My Aged Care will progress that because they need to speak with the older person and ask them if they have consent. So it's better if you can set that call up so that you're both there at the same time. In asking for consent, My Aged Care will want to speak or to hear from the older person who will say, yes, I'm happy for this to go ahead. And then they'll go through those screening questions with people, asking them about their activities of daily living, what they need a bit of help with. Do they need a little bit of help, no help, or a lot of help, or they can't do it? At this point, again, just reflecting on what we've just said about portraying that they can manage or cope or being stoic, I do say to people, if you think that the information that mum or dad are putting across is not entirely accurate, this is your chance to jump in and say, look, that's not quite correct. This is what's really going on. One of the things I say as a shell is you get one chance to make a good first impression with My Aged Care. So this is your chance. This is where you have to get all that accurate information across. So you've got your NEST, you've initiated the call, you're on the call with My Aged Care. They're going through the screening questions. What they will also ask for is a Medicare card. So have that on hand with you. At this point, the other thing I do recommend for people, and this would relate to the family member or the adult child or whoever that sort of that primary contact is going to be, that advocate perhaps, is that you get yourself, and this is the adult child or the advocate for the person, you get yourself appointed as a representative for the older person. So again, the benefit of having both of you on the call at that time is My Aged Care will ask the older person if they agree to appointing whoever it is, Mary Smith, the daughter, or Paul Smith, the son, as the representative. This is the regular representative in My Aged Care. And the older person will have to say, yes, I consent to that. I agree to that. And that gets it out of the way at the beginning. And then both people and the older person will be given an identification number, which starts with the letters AC, and then it's followed by 8 digits. And then the representatives will also get an aged care ID number, which also starts with AC, followed by 8 digits. Then from that point onwards, if that primary contact, that son or that daughter, friend perhaps, other family member, calls My Aged Care to speak on the older person's behalf, My Aged Care will speak with that person. Yeah. And they'll relay information backwards and forwards because that person is identified in the system as the representative. If you are a substitute decision maker, you might be an enduring power of attorney or enduring guardian or these different names for these substitute decision makers across the country. Even if you were legally appointed in that role for mum or dad or spouse, if you call My Aged Care and say, I want to know about mum or dad or how long, what was the outcome of my husband's assessment? If you're not identified as the representative in My Aged Care, will not give you that information. And you can't say, but I'm their enduring power of attorney or I'm their legal guardian or whatever. You can't. You would have to have produced the documentation for that. So It's essential to people need to understand the difference. The roles, that there can be some overlap, but for My Aged Care, you have to be nominated within the system so that My Aged Care are satisfied then that the older person has consented to disclosing information about them.
The person has their screening with My Aged Care, and as a result of that, they are likely to be triaged to one of two assessment teams.
Yes. Now we need to talk about who are these two assessment teams? What are their names? What do they do? What programs do they approve for? You've had your screening with My Aged Care. You'll go to one of two paths from here. You may go in at entry level and you'll be assessed by a workforce known as the Regional Assessment Service or RAS. The approvals that the RAS give, the Regional Assessment Service, they're called referral codes. So referral codes equates to approvals. These referral codes are individual codes or approvals that allow you to receive those subsidised services under the Commonwealth Government. So the Commonwealth Government gives providers who are approved to deliver these kind of services, they give them a bucket of funding. And the funding is known as the Commonwealth Home Support Program, or CHISP. So at entry level, we have RAS and CHISP. The providers who are approved to deliver these CHISP or Commonwealth Home Support Program services, they have this bucket of funding, but it's not an unlimited bucket of funding. Whilst all these older people are potentially coming into the aged care system at entry level, for a couple of reasons, people may or may not get the services that they're approved for by their RAS assessor.
And what could some of those reasons be, Coral?
So the biggest reason that we see is the providers don't have the workforce. They don't have the staffing capability to deliver the services that people are approved for. And the aged care sector struggles with workforce. at every level. People may be approved for services at entry level, but they may not get them delivered because the provider doesn't have the staff to deliver them. The other reason is for certain programs that are approved at entry level, the provider, they have to make that dollar go as far as it possibly can because more and more people, they're given X amount of funding from the Commonwealth government. As more and more people are coming into the system and needing services, they can't make that funding stretch any further. So if they have used it for a particular program and that funding has run out at that point, then they can't deliver the services because that funding has been exhausted.
Right.
But mostly what we see is that even though people are approved at entry level and they have those referral codes, and it might be for things just simple like domestic assistance or lawn mowing or transport, though they've been approved, they still may not get those services delivered for the reasons that I've just said, the funding, but mostly for workforce issues.
Yeah. And Coral, just maybe for clarity, you're saying entry level. Can you give us a bit of an idea of what's entry level? Like, why are you saying entry level services?
So entry level is for people that really need fairly basic services or minimal kind of support. So typically what we see at entry level is people need a bit of help cleaning their house. So they could be approved for fortnightly domestic assistance. Or people are doing okay. They might still be driving. They might still be cooking their meals, but they can't mow the lawn anymore. So they would be approved at entry level to get assistance with lawn mowing. Again, they might be cooking and they might be showering themselves and driving, but they can't change a light bulb or they can't gurney the moldy driveway. So they could be approved for minor home maintenance and have that kind of service delivered. If they're not driving, they could certainly be approved for transport assistance at entry level. They could be approved for subsidised meals, social support, and even some clinical support. So some nursing or allied health support at entry level. So it sounds like a lot. And certainly if you were approved for all of this support and you actually received all of this support, you would be doing very well indeed. But what we typically don't see right across the country, if someone was approved for all this, they wouldn't need to go. They may not need to go to the next level and get a home care package, but the reality is there are providers at entry level right across the country who just cannot deliver the services that align with these kind of approvals or referral codes.
All right, so that's entry level. What if someone's got higher needs?
If someone has high needs, and typically, like just looking at entry level, with all those approvals and referral codes, they're not provided by one provider alone. They go out to a number of providers who have that Commonwealth Home Support Program funding. So we say that at entry level services are fragmented. They're not coordinated. Going up to the next level where people can be approved for a home care package, that's coordinated care. And the next level up is the aged care assessment teams or the ACATs, or in Victoria, they're known as the aged care assessment services or the ACATs. So these are teams of clinicians who have quite a lot of experience in working in the older person space. The clinicians are typically nurses, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, and social workers. So that's usually the range of disciplines that make up the different ACAT teams. They're located right across the country, and ACATs are approving for home care packages or the flexible care programs, which are short-term restorative care and transition care program. And the ACATs obviously also approve for respite in an aged care facility or permanent entry. If someone wants to move into residential accommodation or a nursing home, the ACAT approves that as well. But for the purpose of getting the in-home support, it's the ACAT will approve for those home care packages. And that gives people then the option to have their support more coordinated because it will be one provider who's coordinating all that in-home support for them.
Much easier to manage, I would say.
Yes, it usually is. People have a better sense of, they know when someone is approved for a home care package, they then go and research providers and they choose the provider who they think is going to be best fit for them. And they sign up, they enter into a service agreement with the provider, and then that's their point of contact. They go to that provider if things change or if they need a higher level of care. They will have a care coordinator or a care manager who will be coordinating all that care. And that's who they speak with about ongoing or increased needs.
And I think the other thing that is the difference with these packages too is that the funding is then allocated to the person, isn't it? As opposed to it being
correct,
a bucket of funding. Yeah,
exactly.
And I know we do, people get confused because they say, is that money going to come to me? So do you want to explain how it actually works?
Yeah. So different from entry level where the provider holds the funding, at the next level up at ACAT level, when people are approved for a home care package, the funding or the subsidy for the level of home care package that they're approved for, it's aligned with the person, not the provider. Mary Smith is approved for a level 4 home care package. And that means that at this point in time, as we speak now in April 2024, Mary Smith is going to be allocated $59,593 over a 12-month period. And that's you break that down by 12. So it's a monthly subsidy. Now, it doesn't come into the person's bank account per se, because with this government subsidy or funding, there's a lot that the government expects providers. There's a lot of accountability for using this funding appropriately. The government wants to ensure that let's just say they did deposit it into the person's account, if the person used all that funding to go on a fantastic overseas holiday, that would be entirely inappropriate. So yeah, that does not happen. Services Australia holds the funding, and then the provider is the conduit for the allocation of that subsidy or funding on a monthly basis to the person. It gives people perhaps a better option if they're unable to get any support at entry level because the provider or the organisation doesn't have the staff to deliver it. Going up to the next level where the funding's allocated to, the person then will ring around and choose their provider based on a lot of reasons, but certainly the provider's ability to actually deliver the support that person needs.
Coral, you've just talked about home care packages, and I know you touched on a couple of other programs that the aged care assessment teams can also approve for. What are they?
The in-home programs that the ACAT also approve for are the short-term restorative care program and the transition care program. These two programs come under a flexible care option. They're fantastic programs. Kind of similar, but a little bit different in eligibility. So short-term restorative care and transition care program are going to be one of our episodes in our upcoming podcast. Yep. So I won't go into too much detail about it today, only to be aware that they are excellent. Both of them are excellent programs. In fact, short-term restorative care is my favourite program. As within all of the aged care programs, it delivers really remarkable outcomes. It's clinician-led. That means a whole bunch of clinicians get involved to support a person. And it's currently funded better than the highest level of home care package, the level 4 home care package. It's just over $13,600 over the duration of the program, which is 8 weeks. And then the transition care program, similar, but it's a 12-week program. Eligibility for those is a little bit different in that you have to be in hospital for transition care program, whereas with short-term restorative care, the reason for referral shouldn't be related to a hospital admission that you've had in the past 3 months. So again, big topic there that we'll save for that specific podcast, Shell. But to be aware that when people get up to that level with the aged care assessment team, it really does open up a lot more options to people with some really great programs that they could be approved for.
All right. So we've gone through the assessment, and that could be either the entry level or the aged care assessment team assessment. and the person's given approvals.
Mm-hmm.
What does this look like, Coral, and where does it go from here?
Yeah, so if someone has that regional assessment service or that RAS assessment at entry level, they're given those approvals, which are known as referral codes. Now, one of two things may happen here. The RAS assessor may forward those referral codes onto a local provider who holds that type of funding, that Commonwealth Pain Support Program or CHISP funding. So the RAS assessor may then forward those approval codes or referral codes, I beg your pardon, onto the provider. And then typically, if the provider has the capacity to deliver those services, the provider would then follow up with the person and have a discussion around, we've received your referral codes or your approvals for domestic assistance, lawn mowing and transport. Can we arrange a time where I can come around, one of our coordinators can come around and have a chat with you about that and get you signed up and get you started? So that's one of the scenarios. Now, another scenario is that the RAS assessor may not do that at all and they won't forward those referral codes onto any organisation, any provider. When you get your approval documents in the mail, those approval documents will have all those referral codes written on them. And then it could be up to you. You could ring around to those entry-level providers, those CHISP providers, and you could ask them if they have capacity to deliver the kind of service that you've been approved for. The other thing that happens is that, and so many people are unaware of this, but it's important to know because people just wait and wait and wait. Yeah. And then 9-12 months later, they still haven't received any support and they're wondering why. So what can also happen is that when the RAS assessor completes their assessment and they generate those referral codes or those approvals and they do forward them on to the CHISP provider, if the CHISP provider, the organisation, doesn't have the ability or capacity to deliver those services, they can reject or block, close the back end of the MyAge Care portal for them. So they actually block that incoming approval because they don't have the capacity to deliver that support. Unfortunately, people don't get told this. So they'll mm-hmm. have their RAS assessment. The RAS assessor will say, I'm approving you for A, B, and C, and I'll forward these referral codes off to a provider. And they do that, but the services they don't get accepted by the provider because the provider cannot deliver the services. People aren't told this on the whole. They think, they go, great, I've been approved for these services. I'll just wait now until the organisation contacts me. And that contact never happens because that referral has been rejected or blocked. So people certainly need to be aware. If they haven't been contacted, it's hard to say. I would say probably within about 4 weeks, a month. If there's been absolutely no contact, then they should probably start following up. When they get those hard copy documents, those approval documents in the post, and it has the referral codes there, if the RAS assessor has then forwarded those referral codes onto the provider, it will often have the provider's name.
Right.
So the organisation's name will be there. So the person could follow up with that organisation and say, ask them, when do you think you're going to have capacity? Is it going to be in 6 months, 9 months? Not at all for the foreseeable future.
Yep.
If a lot of those referral codes or approvals are blocked or rejected, then the person would need to take further action. And that would be an indicator for then going back to My Aged Care and requesting a support plan review and getting an ACAT assessment for a home care package in that instance, because it's pointless having all these approvals if you're not actually going to receive support.
Yeah, any support. And in the meantime, I guess the person is getting frailer and less able.
Yep.
Yeah. So although they may have been approved for these entry-level services, if those entry-level services can't be delivered, then that is a legitimate reason for going back and asking for a
support plan review.
A support plan review.
Yeah, and to go up and get an ACAT assessment, because let's talk about ACAT assessments, what happens then. So again, and at both levels, at entry level or the ACAT, a RAS assessor or an ACAT may come to your home and assess you, or they may do it over the phone. So people just need to be mindful. It's not, it ideal would be an in-home assessment, but it's not always possible for different reasons. So the ACAT would assess the person in their home or over the phone. They're very different to entry level because the ACATs are approving for the home care package, which means that funding is assigned to the person and not the organisation. The ACAT will not forward that approval to a provider. They can't. The approval is given within the ACAT. It's signed off by one of the ACAT delegates. And then the person enters the priority queue or the national queue. We call it the queue. With everybody else that's been approved for a home care package across Australia at that time. Lots and lots of people entering the queue or the waitlist at any given time. When people get those documents from the ACAT that list the approvals, and it would be something like you've been approved for a home care package level 2 at a medium priority, or it might be you've been approved for a level 4 home care package, but you've agreed to accept an interim level 2 home care package interim, while a level 3, you're still waiting for that level 4 to become available. People often think that when they get that bundle of documents that is their approval, people think that's actually the assignment of the home care package. So they get in the mail, they open up the envelope. I've been approved for a level 4 home care package. Yay, when's it going to start? No, it doesn't. It's not like that. That initial bundle of documents that you get in the mail is just your approvals. As a person is progressing in that queue, that national queue, priority queue, and moving further and further to the front of the queue, typically the next letter that they would get from iAgeCare would be around the 3-month mark. And that would be saying something like, "Dear Mrs. Smith, you're progressing in the queue. It's anticipated that wait time until assignment of your package is about 3 months. It's a good idea if you start researching providers." And then there's typically another letter that comes out, which is the letter allocating or assigning your home care package. And it's very specific. And it will say words to the effect of, "Dear Mrs. Smith, you have been assigned your level 4 home care package. You have 56 days to enter into a service agreement with a provider. And the date by which you need to do this is," and it will have the date there. The date. And yep. That's when people then need to enter into an agreement with the provider, or the risk is that they will have that home care package. They lose it. Exactly. It's deactivated from them and it's given to someone else. So once that letter comes in telling a person they're assigned and they have 56 days, they really need to get moving because 56 days goes very quickly.
And I think the other thing to be aware of there too is that home care providers can't drop everything and sign somebody up to fit in with that date. They also have their processes.
Exactly.
And yes. And so don't leave it till the last week because chances are you won't get signed up.
Exactly. And look, just touching on that as well, Shel, one of the big myths out there is that if you do miss that uptake date or that sign-up date, that you'll go to the back of the queue. And then you'll have to start that wait time all over again.
All over again, yeah.
But it's not like that at all. So if a person, for whatever reason, misses signing up and choosing a provider in that 56 days, yes, their home care package is deactivated or it's allocated to someone else, but it's not the worst thing that can happen. People who have been waiting all that time, even if they miss signing up with a provider, they still sit at the front of the queue. So if the spouse or if the adult child or someone realises a month later that mum has had received her letter in the mail saying she was assigned her home care package and oops, she didn't tell me and oh gosh, she should have signed up with the provider by the 20th of September and now we're on the 16th of October. Don't panic. It's okay. You can get that package back and it'll come back relatively quickly because you're still sitting at the front of the queue. So in that case, if that was the situation, you would call MyAgeCare. You would tell them, oops, something happened, whatever, didn't realise, we missed the update date. Could you please reactivate that referral code, reactivate that home care package? MyAgeCare will do that straight away. And because you're sitting at the front of the queue, the reassignment or the reallocation of that home care package does happen fairly quickly. So yeah, just to debunk that myth that if you do miss that sign up date, you don't go back to the back of the queue, you stay at the front of the queue.
And I think, Coral, that just prompted me to think that is another reason to have somebody as your regular representative.
Absolutely.
Because that regular representative gets full documents.
Exactly.
If you're worried mum or dad might get it, not know what it means and throw it in the bin, if you're their representative, you will get that documentation as well. Yeah. And it is. It's another bit of a safety net.
So listen, Shel, I think it's a massive topic.
It's huge.
I mean, they're all big topics that related to aged care and what we're going to discuss. So probably we might just jump into a few of my top tips, my takeaway tips before we start running into overtime. And then we will wrap up today's episode.
Okay.
I say to people, if you're thinking about if mum or dad is looking like, or your spouse, yourself even, looking like you're needing some support at home, if you're thinking that way, you should probably act on it at that point, because it takes many months to get into and through the system. And the latest information with regards to level three home care packages is that it's now 9 to 12 months wait to be assigned that level three home care package. It's less for level one and two and fours. But if someone's approved for a level three, they're going to have up to a year to wait. So if people have reached a point where they've delayed getting into the system because they've been getting along okay for a while, and then all of a sudden they can't anymore, it reduces your options, and it does make it more difficult if you're expecting that support to come in straight away and it's actually going to take months. It can take months to get an ACAT assessment. I mean, so if people are thinking that they themselves or an older loved one needs some support, get in there now, get into the system and start speaking with My Aged Care, going through those different assessments and getting that support as they need it now.
Yeah, absolutely. And needing help is, or admitting that you need help, it's not an acknowledgement of failure.
Not
it simply
all.
Is.
Exactly. And these programs are designed to keep people at home for as long as possible.
Exactly.
Again, just reiterating, recapping what we said in the beginning, do not call My Aged Care until you've had a really good think about all the support that you're getting. The easiest way I say for people to do this is think about perhaps your neighbours, your family, your friends, any support that someone is offering you, just remove it, mentally remove it from your day or your week. And that is probably the simplest way of people going, oh, okay, so I do call on my neighbour once a week to take me to the shops when she goes to the shops, or she does pick up my groceries for me once or twice a week. Reflecting on all that support that you're currently getting and writing that very important list in preparation for that initial contact with My Aged Care.
And then I think the next thing is have someone with you when you make that phone call to My Aged Care. They can input their information. They can be taking notes.
They register as a representative so that they can communicate with My Aged Care and support the older person.
Yeah.
One of the things we say again is people need to present the worst case day or the worst day when they're having the conversation with My Aged Care. I always say to people, reflect on a day that was particularly difficult for the older person. Maybe they had a lot of back pain or hip pain and really struggled to get out of bed that day. And because they struggled to get out of bed, perhaps because of the hip pain or the back pain, perhaps their mobility was particularly poor that day.
Yes.
Did you notice that they were stumbling when they were walking, or because of the pain, did they not want to eat during the day? So reflecting on the, we know as people age, they're going to become frailer and their needs are going to increase. So reflecting on what the worst day is or the worst case day is the best representation of being able to articulate the kind of support that you need.
Yeah, absolutely. And Coral, articulating, I know we say it all the time, be the squeaky wheel.
Be the squeaky wheel.
Do not be afraid to advocate for yourself or your loved one.
Yep.
So important.
Yep. Follow up. Like I said, if you've had an assessment, particularly at entry level, and you haven't heard from anybody in about a 4-week period, start making some phone calls. Again, even if you know that you've gotten through to the ACAT, it does take a little while. ACATs, they do a great job. Yeah. They get a lot of referrals. They're triaging those referrals in. They're looking at the urgency that all those referrals are coming. They're coming in. How urgent is one person compared to another person? If you know that's where you are within the system, but then something changes and you need an ACAT assessment sooner rather than later, then call My Aged Care again. If you happen to have the office number of your local ACAT, give them a call. But certainly don't be afraid to follow up with My Aged Care and say, look, something has happened. We really need that support now. Mum or dad or my spouse, I can't continue to support them without formal support. Get that information across. And then again, the ACAT has the ability to see you sooner rather than later if your needs change and you get that information across as to why you need that support sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Oh, so, Coral, what a massive topic.
It's a huge topic. Like, it's really, it's simple, but it's not simple. There's so much more to it. So preparation is key for getting off on the right foot with My Aged Care, the gateway to all that subsidised in-home support. I think we will leave it at that because, it's a lot to take on.
It's a lot to take on. Yeah. All right, that's a wrap then for episode 4. And we look forward to seeing you all again next week. Hey, care community. Thanks for listening to this episode. So you never miss a show, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. If you'd like to know more about what we do, head to our website, cmeacn.com.au.